The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Trudeau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Roy Saunderson, along with my friend and colleague Max Brown, and we're from Rideau's Recognition Management Institute. And I'm really excited about today's show, Max. I mean, who would think that we would be able to talk about leadership and always put the word positive in front of it?
Well, and not only that, Roy, but to further that comment, you know, we've been a fan of this gentleman's work for many years now, and it's powerful and so important. I really hope our listeners will get engaged and actually find other people to get on this show and listen.
Absolutely, and kind of an interesting, I don't think there's ever coincidences in life, but I just got off speaking with a director of human resources at a healthcare facility, and she said, and I've been reading this great book on positive leadership. So that was just literally right before the show, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Our guest today is Dr. Kim S. Cameron, the Associate Dean in charge of Executive Education in the Rust School at the University of Michigan, and is the author of Positive Leadership Strategies for Extraordinary Performance. And his current research focuses on the virtuousness of and in organizations and their relationships to organizational success. And he's one of the co-founders of the Center for Positive Organizational Scholarship at the University of Michigan, a research center recently recognized by the Academy of Management as having the most positive impact on the practice of leadership and organizational effectiveness of any center in the world. Quite the accomplishment. His past research has been published in more than 120 academic articles and 14 scholarly books, and he was recently recognized as among the top 10 social science scholars whose work has been downloaded from Google. Kim, welcome to the show today.
You're very kind, Roy, and Max, thanks so much for having me. It's a real honor.
Well, it's certainly been one of those great books that, you know, you kind of just quickly pull off the shelf and go, ah, here's where I can dig deeper on various subjects. Just a great compendium, plus the many other things that you have done. And all your research, I mean, it's on management skills, leadership, organizational culture and effectiveness, many other areas. Is there a core that drives you to study these subjects? What got you into this line of research, Cam?
That's a good question. The history of my research has been about every decade or so. I shift themes, but primarily the driver has been what kinds of problems do we solve, or what phenomena can I observe or do I observe where there's really not a very good explanation. For example, I started off my doctoral dissertation, actually, and for the first 10 years or so of my career was a study of how do you determine if an organization is effective. And that seems like a very easy, mundane, not very exciting kind of question. But if I were to ask somebody at is Harvard more effective than Yale? Well, it depends on if you live in New Haven or Cambridge, you know. Or Michigan more effective than Michigan State? Depends on which side of the state you live on. So
right.
People make those choices all the time, but not rationally. And you know, the next 10 years was on downsizing. And it's hard to live in Michigan without studying downsizing. So the question is, well, what happens to organizations when they downsize? And why is it that most of them deteriorate, diminish in their performance? So that became a 10-year or so study. And then there was another one of the observations I made is that because 80% or so of organizations downsize deteriorate in performance, that leaves 10 or 15% that do not. That then led me to trying to ask the question, what's unique about the 10 or 15% of organizations that flourish even though they're in real trouble? That led to the positive leadership topic.
Ah, I see. So I can relate to that because in the 90s, I was a director of a department at a hospital, and the downsizing that came through our provincial government caused us to lose our jobs. And in your, I can certainly say to you that, you know, there was a decline in that organization's overall performance. What are those unique characteristics that you discovered in your research?
When I discovered, first of all, and it's been confirmed by many others, when I discovered that 80 or 85% of organizations that downsize, retrench, cut the budget, and so on, deteriorate in performance, meaning morale goes down, quality goes down, productivity goes down, communication channels get restricted. I sometimes refer to that as a dirty dozen, 12 negative dysfunctional things. But then I noticed that 10 or 15% flourish, and so I was trying to understand, well, what's the difference? Well, what I discovered, and I didn't really have data on this, what I discovered, though, I thought, was something that I ended up labeling organizational virtuousness. Now, holy cow, in scholarly circles, that doesn't resonate very clearly with colleagues. But that what that meant is these organizations literally had institutionalized compassion and gratitude and humility and trust and forgiveness and so on. I mean, things that your grandmother tells you about. And I began saying, I wonder if it's actually possible to detect or measure or get relatively rigorous about trying to understand whether or not those things exist and how you would ever identify them. That's led to this 10 years or so of a pretty exciting journey of trying to understand the positive side of business.
So if you've got these positive qualities, And very bold qualities when you're talking about organizations, when you're talking about compassion and gratitude and forgiveness and those kinds of actions, how do you get from belief and how do you get organizations to actually do strategies that, I guess it's a chicken-egg thing. What comes first? How do you actually get the strategies to make these things happen? Or where do you get those attitudes where people really get on board and do it?
Yeah, that's really a good question, and it's the $64,000 question, because part of what we've done in the last 10 years or so is to try to do two things in this research center here at the University of Michigan. One is to see whether or not we can create, or not create, but whether or not we can identify or uncover evidence that there is, in fact, a connection between virtuous, positive practices and performance. I'm going to come to the second in a minute, but there's an irony about this, Roy and Max, that's sort of interesting. That is, for example, if I am kind to you only to get what I want or get a good payback, I only will be kind if I get some kind of return. Well, by definition, it ceases to be kindness. Now it's manipulation. So by definition, those kinds of virtuous, positive practices don't need a return to be valuable. We all say kindness is better than abuse. Virtually the world over, people believe that. But nevertheless, if I walk into an organization and say, I would like to study CEO, I'd like to study the extent to which this organization is characterized by kindness and humility and forgiveness and compassion, for the most part, I will get the response saying, wait a minute, look, I got an analyst meeting in 15 minutes. Don't bother me with all this grandmother's advice. You show me how it pays off, then maybe I'll give you the time. But otherwise, hey, get off my back. So in other words, my own research question has been, I know that we don't need a payback, but nevertheless, is there one anyway? Is, in fact, the 10 or 15% of organizations that do well, even in really difficult circumstances, is that detectable and can we measure it? Answer resoundingly is yes. That is, when you implement positive practices, you get a payback. So the second thing we've been doing, and I'll stop right here, is to try to then say, well, what would the practices be? Specifically, what could I do if I'm a leader?
And what you've left me hanging. What can you do? Don't do that to me, Kim. What can a leader do, you know, to create the vision, but also making it a way of life, doing things?
Sure. And there's some very common sort of non-rocket science practices everybody knows about. It's easy to find them in airport bookstores and whatnot. There are also some others that have emerged from our research that are a little less common, more unique, but nevertheless effective. And I'll tell you some of those. Because what we've discovered is, in fact, one of the research projects that was particularly exciting to me is that we found 40 organizations in financial services. We're talking about Wall Street firms. And of all the places on the planet who don't care about virtuousness is Wall Street. I mean, show me the money. I got one. But we found 40 who would take this seriously, and we had them ask them to implement over a two-year period of time, implement various positive practices. Some did well, some didn't, some were in the middle. And then the research question was, if you actually implement these, what happens to outcomes you care about? And in Wall Street, it's financial performance, not to mention employee engagement and turnover rates and innovation and so on. And as it turns out, the results are very compelling. If you improve in these practices, you, in fact, improve dramatically in the outcomes you want. So what that leads me to believe is it's possible to actually implement something and have it produce an outcome. That is, you don't have to have the outcome and say, oh, sure enough, we're better than you are, but we've always been better than you are. Rather, it's possible to say, in an organization, we can help leaders begin practicing certain things that they haven't before. And I'll give you some examples of some of what we've discovered. You want to take a break, or do you want me to talk about them right now?
Well, you know what? I think you've probably given me just as good a cue. That why don't we just hold on to those examples so Max can take that in our next segment of the show. Kim, we're going to take a quick break. And so I'm Roy Saunderson and Max Brown for all of our listeners. And our guest today is Dr. Kim Cameron. And you're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Please stay tuned as we get some more wonderful examples about positive leadership and how we can have extraordinary positive performance.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
America is heading over a fiscal cliff. Home prices are still receding and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown. And, of course, our guest today is Dr. Kim Cameron, the Associate Dean of Executive Education at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan and the author of Positive Leadership Strategies for Extraordinary Performance. Kim, we were just talking before the break about what are some of these examples or specific actions of positive leadership that we should be implementing?
Well, thanks, Max, for the chance to talk about some of these. There are, of course, many, and they're not, it's not surprising to most folks who will be listening, but there are three or four that we've identified here that maybe supplement what most people already know about. I'll give you two or three of those examples. We can talk about more if you'd like. One of the things that we've discovered is, and it's not news, feedback helps a lot. That is, nobody ever gets enough feedback. I mean, most of us, when we go into a restroom, we always check in the mirror because we need to know how we're doing, and nobody ever feels like I've got enough information. So in organizations, frequently, they will provide surveys, 360 instruments, or surveys of morale or engagement or something. And those are often very useful. But what's interesting about those surveys is if, for example, I get a data feedback on a 360 survey, that is, I'm rating myself and I have colleagues, peers, superiors, and subordinates rating me, and I get that feedback in some kind of report, the first thing I do is look for the low scores. I will look for what's going wrong. I'll look for where people are rating me lower than I think I should be rated and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like getting a report card and having four A's and a C minus. I mean, the very first thing I look at is that C minus.
Yep.
So the question is, well, how do I capitalize on the positive? How do I get well, you've heard from other guests in past shows. How do I get the advantage of capitalizing on my strengths? So one of the things we've done is develop a supplement to 360s, and it's called a Reflected Best Self Feedback Survey. And the process goes essentially like this. I would ask a person, for example, in a course or a class or just even individually, find 20 people, at least 20 people, who know you well. Can be friends, can be family, can be coworkers, can be neighbors, maybe a representative sample from each of those categories. Now ask those people to please write three short paragraphs or three short descriptions of when they have seen you add unique value. That is, you have done something that represents a real strength that makes a contribution or that's highly valued. So an alternative to that question is, write three paragraphs when you've seen me at my very best. That last question is not quite specific enough to get good data. But if I ask you to write three paragraphs, three incidents when you've seen me make a real contribution that's been unique and real valued, I get back 60 stories, all of which are behavioral, all of which describe me at my very best. And then we take people through a process where they simply create a reflected, what we call a reflected best self portrait. When I am absolutely at my peak, at my best, here is what happens. Here's what I do. Here are the contributions I make. Frequently, people say, boy, this is, I didn't realize people valued this so much because it's pretty easy for me. This is kind of just who I am. Mm-hmm. So we help people identify strategies for capitalizing on what they do especially well. So all we're doing is supplementing. You have to work on weaknesses, of course, but we're trying to supplement that with the principle that if you focus on your strengths, you make lots more progress than if you try to overcome your weaknesses and simply get them to an acceptable level. So, there's lots of surveys that are built on the strengths-based philosophy, and this is
yes.
a way to measure that. So it's a tool that we help people identify their strengths. So that's one thing. There are several others. I'll give you another example or two. In organizations, the way we normally draw pictures of organizations is with an organization chart, boxes and arrows. It looks like a pyramid of some kind. An alternative picture of an organization is a network map. It's like in the back of an airline magazine. Only cities are the hubs, and some in the center, some in the periphery. Well, you can do that in organizations with people. Well, how do you draw a network map in an organization? Normally, it's with information flows or communication networks. So the research over time, this is actually, there's a lot of research on this. There's the research over time has been very clear. If I'm at the hub of an information network, my performance is higher, as is the unit I manage, which makes sense. If all the information flows through me, I know the organization secrets and I can decide what to share and so on, I'm going to do better. All right, an alternative is an influence network. So again, if I'm at the hub of an influence network, if I'm all I'm more influential to other people than they are of me, and I'm a powerful person in the organization, I'm going to do better, as is the unit I manage. Okay, we have been doing research in this center on positive energy networks. Well, what in the world is that? So when I interact with Max, when I interact with Roy, what happens to my energy? Am I uplifted, elevated? Are they life-giving? Or are they depleting, exhausting, difficult to deal with? It's just tough. In which case, you would be de-energizers. So I can collect that information very easily. One way is to simply ask, give me a list of people. When I interact with them, what happens to my energy? See, I'm not rating them. I'm rating me when I interact with them. Well, you can create that in an organization pretty easily. You can create a network map to determine who are the hubs or center of the positive energy networks. All right. Now, there's several things crucial about understanding positive energizers. Number one is your position in the positive energy network, of course, predicts performance. People who are positive energizers are higher performers. But the research that the findings in the research that's most surprising is that your position in the positive energy network is four times more important in predicting performance than your position in the information network or the influence network. Now, we manage constantly or lead in organizations. We spend a lot of our time thinking about information flows. Did you get the memo? Is everybody at the meeting? Communication network in place? I mean, that dominates us. Influence also dominates us. Did you get the results? Who are you going to make sure gets the work done? Incentive systems, all those kinds of things are based on influence. So information and influence dominate us. Question is, do you ever manage energy? Does anybody ever get rewarded for being a positive energizer or recognized or hired or in any way managed? Because it trumps what we normally manage by a factor of four. So we are spending a fair amount of time thinking about, number one, measuring positive energy and then trying to identify, well, how do you develop it? And again, developing positive energy, what we've discovered is a set of behaviors, not just personality. So sometimes people say, well, somebody's a positive energizer if they have a charismatic personality or they're extroverts. Except that in the research, the correlation between being a positive energizer and being an extrovert is essentially zero. I mean, there are a lot of people who are extroverts who don't energize anybody. They just kind of take up time or they're selfish. Other people are much more demure, less demonstrative, but who give life to the system, help other people flourish. So the idea of positive energy is connected to making a contribution, helping other people flourish, being a person who helps who creates more energy in a system than they extract. So actually in my university, one of the criteria we use for hiring people is you have to be a net positive energizer. The system has to be elevated by you as opposed to diminished by you when you join.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are other tools, of course, that we've made. I can talk about several of those if you'd like.
Well, it's fascinating to me, and as I think about this, the big distinction that I love is that it's not just about being outgoing. Outgoing can be selfish, but it's about having a genuine desire to help others flourish around you, and that, in my mind, is a definition of great leadership.
Yeah, it's really true. There's a pretty classic study done here by a a psychologist on our campus. She took entering freshmen, 18 or 19-year-old kids. She simply asked them to identify the goals they had for the year. Now, everybody has lots of goals, but she categorized these goals into two types. One were called achievement goals. I want to get good grades. I want to be popular. I want to have a girlfriend or whatever. And the other were called contribution goals. I want to make a difference. I want to have something improve as a result of my being here. Now, as it turns out, everybody has lots of goals, but some people were dominated by achievement goals. Some people were dominated by contribution goals. So she simply followed these students for 1 year. She put them into two categories, depending on which type of goal was most dominant. And then she measured things like how well they got along with the roommates, how many minor physiological symptoms they experienced, like headaches and nausea and menstrual cramps and so on, how many hours they donated outside of class in extracurricular activities, how many offices they got elected to, what their grade point average was at the end of the semester, how many days of class they missed, and so on. On every single dimension, there was a statistically significant difference. Contribution goals trumped achievement goals. That is, those who were in business to contribute exceeded by a significant margin the performance of those who simply had as a goal, I want to achieve. So it's a principle that we all kind of know about, better to give than receive and all that kind of stuff, but it's been confirmed multiple times, and it's similar, it's a high correlation with positive energy. Contribution creates better relationships, creates better organizations, and so on. Leaders, the best leaders, especially the best positive leaders, are people who say, I'm a contributor, I'm not just an achiever. Now, you have to be both, but contribution trumps.
Boy, I've seen that too many times, too, you know, where someone just looking to achieve and thinking that that's and thinking that somehow that's the virtuous way as well. It's almost like in society, we almost tend to celebrate achievement as if it's the virtuous way, forgetting that it's very self-centered. And I'm not, you know, downplaying achievement here, but just putting it on its end here in terms of what you just revealed to us in terms of the research.
It's really true. You know, what we're doing essentially, Max, is confirming what many of us know to be true. That is, it's not unusual for somebody to say, well, I've sort of always believed this, but gee, it's nice to have the data that actually confirms it. So
yeah.
We often have a principle that we're not going to prescribe anything where we don't have empirical data, validated findings that confirm what we're saying is true. And, you know, there's some things contradicted, but we discover lots of times that, sure enough, the data really does confirm compassion is better than the reverse. You know, forgiving mistakes is better than holding a grudge and so on.
Boy, sure enjoy this conversation. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with our guest today, Dr. Kim Cameron, and talk more about extraordinary positive performance. This is Max Brown and my colleague and friend Roy Saunderson. We'll be right back.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
Social media is growing at an astounding rate. In just virtually 5 short years, we have seen YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter take the world by storm. How do you effectively make social media work for you? Tune in to The Social Universe with host Kurt Wilhelm. We'll show you how to market your business or yourself to get ahead, especially in unstable economic times. We'll also discuss practices that you can apply to increase visibility and revenue as you unlock the mysteries of the social universe. The Social Universe is broadcast live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. Myself, Roy Saunderson, and my friend and colleague, Max Brown, and our guest today, Dr. Kim Cameron, the Associate Dean of Executive Education at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. Go Blue! I was curious, some of our listeners are going to be saying that this is incredible that these kinds of practices have been statistically proven, but how do you get from one person who believes in this and can obviously do it, hopefully it's going to be the leader, but how do you get a whole group of people living these practices? Have you seen any kind of indicators for how to get that kind of collective mindset going?
You know, we try to do that, Roy. That's often the biggest challenge because it's not unusual at all for me to be asked to go give a presentation or teach a group of people or something, and the introduction is, well, wait a minute, these people are really skeptical. They're surgeons, they're lawyers, they're engineers. They're not going to, I mean, this seems a little squishy, a little soupy and syrupy to them, and I don't know for sure, which I really do understand because, you know, I'm one of those skeptics and critics as well. In academia, the general role of an academic is to be critical. I mean, it's, disprove the null hypothesis, and it's disprove. That's what we're trying to do is instead of confirm some previous bias, we're trying to make sure we have evidence that something is actually not as you'd expect. So there's kind of a cynical, negative bias in academia as well as, of course, lots of other professions. So the first thing I try to do is provide evidence. And, gee, there is overwhelming evidence. I mean, there's evidence that a positive approach, positive leadership, and positive organization practices actually produce desirable outcomes. And the first step for me is to provide evidence. And at the individual level, there's evidence that's, at least for me, pretty intriguing. For example, in one study, they simply did, these are not my studies, but all have been published in refereed academic journals. In one study, they simply asked people to think about, contemplate a positive, optimistic future versus others who contemplated a neutral or a negative, discouraging future. While contemplating, they simply did MRIs of their brains. You simply put people in a MRI machine and scan their brains.
Mm-hmm.
People in the positive condition, as it turns out, had more areas of their brain activated. And of those areas that were activated, they were activated to a greater extent than those in the neutral or negative condition. That is, inherently in people's brains, they perform better, you are more activated, you're smarter, your IQ points are higher in a positive state relative to a negative state. And so I refer to that as what's called a heliotropic effect. Now, that's a terribly jargonish word. But the heliotropic effect can be illustrated by a plant in the window. Over time, a plant will lean toward the light.
Yes.
So as it turns out, the heliotropic effect can be described as every living system, which is true. Every living system has a tendency toward the light and away from dark, or toward that which is positive, or toward positive energy, away from negative energy, or maybe most accurately defined, toward that which is life-giving, away from that which is life-depleting. Now, in the nature, the sun is, of course, a life-giving force. Well, even evolutionary processes would suggest that species are attracted to that which gives life and repelled or avoid that which endangers or detracts from life. Okay, well, the heliotropic effect is typical of human beings. We flourish in positive states and not so much in negative states. I'll give you one other example, or lots of these. And I'm going to finally return, Roy, to actual question. In your body, you have, for example, various rhythms. You have a heart rhythm. You have a brain rhythm. You have muscle twitch rhythms and so on. In medical science, when all of those rhythms are perfectly aligned, it's called coherence. And you can measure coherence. And the perfect, exactly ideal state of coherence can be measured at 0.1 hertz, H-E-R-T-Z. Okay. You simply can do scans of people's biorhythms in various states. So, for example, in anxiety or stress, your biorhythms are out of whack and by no means coherent. In a relaxed state or even asleep, your biorhythms are better but still not coherent. The only time physiologically that you are perfectly coherent is in a virtuous state, in a gratitude state, in a kindness state, in a trusting state, and so on. That is virtuous conditions in the human being produce perfect coherence biologically. Okay, those are two of maybe 15 studies that have been done that say, you know what, if you can induce a positive state in individuals, you actually do better physiologically, do better cognitively, intellectually, and socially, and so on. Okay. But then your question, if the evidence is present that positive states are heliotropic, or that people flourish in positive states, how in the world are you going to get an organization to take this seriously? Well, again, my approach, it's just because I'm pretty boring when I talk. I'm not one of those charismatic razzmatazz speakers, but I have to rely on data. So yes. One more time, when I show up in an organization, I'll often spend at least a certain amount of time saying, here's the science, here's the evidence, here's the hard facts that will make the case that this actually will pay off for you. Then the challenge is, all right, what can we do that people won't reject, you know, that. So that then becomes a challenge of how do you manage or lead organization change. And there are good change models. I use some of my own, and there are many change models around of how people intervene in organizations. The thing that I've come to believe most strongly is that if I can help an organization develop a culture that is sort of embedded in the organization itself, a culture, I call it a culture of abundance, characterized by positive practices and virtuousness and so on. If I can help a culture of abundance be developed, more than half the battle is won. The trouble is that organization culture is very difficult to understand and identify. For example, none of us woke up this morning saying, maybe I think I'll speak English today. We don't even know we do until we encounter somebody who does not speak English. In other words, we don't know culture exists, because language is certainly a part of our culture. We don't even know it exists until we encounter something that's countercultural. So to try to assess culture and to change culture requires real interventions. And part of what we do with organizations frequently is to help them change their culture. And it's by assessment, and it's by practices, and it's by helping to highlight key values and frankly, virtues.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's amazing. And these topics, I mean, we've had Barbara Fredrickson, Brené Brown, and others on our show, and they're all talking about these topics like hope, gratitude, wisdom, forgiveness, courage, compassion. Why do you think these subjects are now receiving such academic attention as well as trying to get these happening in organizations? Why right now?
You know, that's a good question. For me, it was a product of this downsizing research and beginning to see something very strange and very unusual. But I attribute, at least to some extent, this would probably be disagreed by many. I attribute, to some extent, a general acceptance or acceptability of these kinds of topics to two people. One of them is Steve Covey. I actually grew up in the neighborhood of Steve Covey, and he was a friend for a long time. And I remember getting on a plane with him. This was, I don't know, 20 years ago or something. I was this young, naive kid who didn't know anything. And Steve, because he knew me and in my neighborhood, he came back and sat next to me on a plane. And we were just chatting together. And he said, you know, I just been at IBM. And he said, I always get the highest ratings of anybody that ever goes to IBM and talks to their senior team. And he said, I've decided that I'm going to spend my time talking about things I care deeply about. I'm just not going to waste time anymore on things that I don't believe in. So he said, I just spent 4 hours with a senior executive team at IBM, and I talked about three principles. Principle number one is, and he said, I wrote them on a board. Now, that's how long ago it was, you know, before PowerPoint and razzmatazz technology. But principle number one is, we are all children of God. Now, holy cow, are you kidding me? How are you going to say that in a business setting? But that was principle number one. He spent an hour talking about that. Number two is, repentance is the best formula for change, organizationally and individually. And he spent time talking about that. And then the third principle was, I can't remember, something similar to that, had to do with human relationships or something. But, I mean, this guy was 20 years before the rest of us and courageous enough to begin using words in public settings and in business settings that simply were not legitimate, too philosophical, too religious, too new age, too soupy, too syrupy, something. But I think it kind of plowed the ground a bit. All right, that's one guy. Second is a guy named Marty Seligman, and most people know Marty.
Yes, yeah.
Marty had that famous incident where Marty is not a spring chicken anymore, you know, but he had a little daughter who was 5 years old. He was probably in his maybe 60, late 50s or 60s. She was 5 or 6 years old. He had been writing in his early career on learned helplessness and other really negative things. And one day he was out in the garden and she came out and did something wrong and he really chewed her out. And she turned to him. Now, this is a 5-year-old girl. Turned to him and said, Daddy, one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life was to stop sucking my thumb. But I stopped. And if I can stop sucking my thumb, you can stop being a grouch. And somehow that was a 2x4 at the back of his head. And he thought, you're right. And it changed his whole approach to scholarship. And so he then was elected as the president of the American Psychological Association. This was 1989, I think. Or no, 1999. And he used that position as a bully pulpit to try to espouse this thing called positive psychology. Now, it was not nearly as well developed back then as it is now. And then some people say, well, wait a minute, Cameron, that's way too modern, the Covey-Seligman thing, because it started back with Katz and Maslow and a bunch of other psychologists in the 40s and 50s. And the OD movement back then with Bennis and so on was all positive. And they're exactly right, except that there was no empirical data. It was all sort of a philosophy. Here's how we ought to approach things. You know, McGregor's theory Z or theory Y. You know, everybody's been talking about theory X. We got to have a theory Y. Treat people well, but there's really very little empirical data. So since about 2000, this is a field that's not very old. Since about 2000, people have gotten really serious about brain scans, for Pete's sake, and cardiorhythms and stress resilience to stress, and not to mention organization practices. So I think we're building on the backs of some very courageous people who were plowing the ground before.
Our pioneers, yeah. Well, we're certainly grateful to have you kind of take that forward as you have. And, Kim, it looks like we're going to have to take another short intermission here. But for our listeners, come back for our final segment with our guest, Dr. Kim Cameron. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, I'm Roy Sonnison along with Max Brown, reminding you to keep it real.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Sonderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. Let's continue the conversation with Dr. Kim Cameron and get some final pointers on extraordinary positive performance. Kim, something that strikes me, you know, you've mentioned it a couple times that a lot of this might even seem like common sense or things that we've known for a long time, and you've validated it through the research. Why is it still so hard to implement in organizations? Why do we still have so many organizations that seem to struggle at some of these things?
You know, it's hard to know that for sure, but I think it's because it's soupy and syrupy and has traditionally been substanceless, or in other words, it's, you know, charlatans running around the country with one more fad. So that could be part of it. I think because literally it's only been in the last dozen years or so that there has begun to build a real foundation of science and empirical evidence that some things work and some things don't. To be expected that we'd be skeptical if there isn't evidence. I mean, in medical science, evidence-based practice is pretty crucial. I don't want somebody taking out my appendix if they say, well, maybe I'll try it this way this time. You know, I want to make sure there's evidence to that procedure. So I think that that's, you know, most of us are skeptical of things that are just fly-by-night and faddish. So I think this field of study is now beginning to finally flourish and emerge and becoming more and more practiced. I'm amazed, in fact, even in Europe and especially in Asia, how eager they are to have this kind of information shared. I probably literally get an email every day or every other day from somebody in Iran or Egypt or even Afghanistan, not to mention Japan and China and Korea and Singapore and so on, asking for information, asking for literature, or asking me to comment on some kind of a process. I've been to Africa several times. We've actually helped them create in South Africa a center similar to ours to try to capitalize on positive practices. And what they're doing essentially is saying, look, Nelson Mandela helped create free South Africa, but it's not been implemented, it's not been disseminated nearly as much as we want it to be. So come down here and help us do this. So actually, I spent a week at Nelson Mandela University helping create a center down there. So there's a certain amount of hunger. Desmond Tutu once said, the world is hungry for these kinds of things, but we haven't known where to look. And so in some ways, it's a movement. It's maybe a little bit of even a cult in the sense that it's not widely disseminated yet, but there's certainly some avid evangelicals who who are espousing certain principles, and I'm certainly one of them, who believe that organizations are better if we implement this stuff. Now, and the other reason, of course, is that in the profit sector, boy, is there pressure to get numbers. I mean, if stock price is going down tomorrow, and I'm a senior exec and I've got responsibility for this, you know, my neck's on the line. And so more than likely, competitive strategy and, control and operations and getting things to click right now, boy, that's going to be where the pressure is. Some of these other positive principles are much much less likely to be implemented in the next 15 minutes. And it takes a little bit of time to have them unfold in organizations. But, boy, our data is clear. If they unfold, if they're implemented in organizations, we have 30 different healthcare organizations we studied, again, implementing these positive practices. And in those organizations that scored high in positive practices, those hospitals, we had double-digit improvement in quality of care, morbidity rates or illness rates, patient-nurse interactions, for heaven's sake, family satisfaction. I mean, almost every dimension that the hospitals wanted to measure and keep track of, it went up by double digits. I mean, sometimes 30%. So, I'm convinced personally that it matters a lot.
You know, Roy asked this question earlier, and we talked about it a moment in that segment around, is there a trend towards this? That it's a movement, if you will. A lot of people are talking about it. Some companies are being celebrated for it. Do you see other trends emerging from this?
I really do believe it's a trend. You know, there's the best places to work for and all those kinds of lists that are beginning to emerge. I'm actually just beginning a major research project funded by a group of organizations. I think there are 90,000 companies called the Small Giants Corporations. They're all small companies. They're not going to ever be big. And they're asking us to help them identify what are the very best practices, unusual and especially positive practices that differentiate the winners from everybody else. It's not the winners from the losers, but who are the most extraordinary and what's different about them? So that kind of study would never have been done 10 years ago or 15 years ago, but it's now on the top of mind, you know. I'm not sure why that's the case, other than now there's a fair amount of publicity. You know, Barbara's, Fredrickson's, and others of these people you've had on, their books are beginning to be popular and read, and it resonates with folks.
Well, and I might add that yours is one of those books that if listeners don't and haven't read yet, I would say go get it now. Go get it now. And with that in mind, how could people go get it? Where should they go?
You know, I think everything I've written is probably on Amazon or Barnes & Noble and so on. There's the most recent book is simply called Positive Leadership. There's some other academic, and that's not quite as academic as normal books. You know, I write for as a replacement for Ambien. If you have a hard time sleeping, just pick up my book, you know. But there are some other real replacements. One of them is a recent book published by Oxford University Press, and it's simply called The Oxford Handbook of Positive Organizational Scholarship. And it answers the questions, what do we know now about this field of positive scholarship? What do we know now that we didn't know 10 years ago? Now, the trouble is, it's a 1,200-page book, literally, but recently in paperback, so it's a kind of a tome for trying to summarize all the stuff we know.
Yeah,
I've just finished another book. It'll be out in August of 2013 called Practicing Positive Leadership, which is simply, all right, here's some very specific actions to take. Here's some interventions you can make in an organization. Here's activities that you could help your family engage in or your organization engage in. So there's a number of those kind of resources available. There's also a website at our research center here at University of Michigan. In fact, if people simply write Center for POS, all one word, centerforpos.com, That is a website that is attempting to be a clearinghouse. It's attempting to be a place where you can find books and videos, lectures, course syllabi, resources of a variety of kinds, including names and contact information for scholars around the world.
Yeah.
So that would be a place, if people are really serious about diving deeply, that's hopefully a helpful place.
Well, it's fantastic. And you talked about the healthcare and the small giants research you got coming up. Do you know Paul Spiegelman then? He's
a
small giants.
Do, my goodness. Paul is one of the real sponsors of this program. That's great.
He's great. We've had him on our show as well.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
He is a good man, and I love that work. I love that work. So we look forward to having you on again in the future to talk about that work and your results on that. Would you do that?
I'll be delighted to do it. I'll say I appreciate so much the chance to talk. I know you've had some hot shots on your program, but you got to take a break once in a while. So thanks for doing it with me, Max and Roy.
You
grateful
are to
delightful.
Have you on the show,
my
Paul.
Goodness.
I can.
My goodness. Yeah, sorry, Roy. I talked over you. I was laughing at the
don't,
time.
Don't worry. I just think grateful to have had you on the show, Kim. It's been a wonderful to get to these insights and to realize the great influence that positivity can have.
Thank you, Roy, very much.
That's so true. We're so grateful that you'd be here, so grateful you would share this, and hope our listeners and know that they would find great value in taking advantage of the book and the research and all the work you continue to do. We're so grateful we're connected. And for our listeners out there, thank you. Thank you for being our listeners. Thank you for listening to Real Recognition Radio and making it such a popular place to go on iTunes and elsewhere, and the downloads have been phenomenal. We're really grateful for that. If you have any feedback for us, please come to rideau.com, rideau.com. Speak to us directly. You can find us there. We'd love to have that connection. For Max Brown and Roy Saunderson, this is Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, reminding you to keep it real. Until next time.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.